Let's go at 8 minutes to 10 to Australia. And our correspondent, Karen Middleton, is with us. Kia ora, Karen.
Well, good morning, Susie.
Let's talk this morning, firstly, about fears of a recession. What is the Reserve Bank saying about all of this, and what sort of criticism are they coming in for?
Well, we've seen our Reserve Bank here, our central bank, raising interest rates on a very steep climb over the last few months. We've had a long period, as many countries have, of very low interest rates, virtually zero, given the economic circumstances we've all faced, and particularly the pandemic in recent times. But inflation has been rising, and so the Reserve Bank has been pulling the usual levers on monetary policy to respond to that. They have a target range of getting inflation to between 2% and 3%, and it's at 6% at the moment. So they need it to come back. There is a trajectory that says that it will over the next couple of years, but they're trying to get that to happen quickly. And there was criticism that they waited too long in raising interest rates, and now there's criticism that they're doing it too fast. And with the cost of living very high and rising, that this is a problem for people managing their finances, and that in fact that this it's not acknowledging what the source of the problem is. So a lot of the source of the problem of the high cost of living, rising cost of everything, is circumstances beyond consumers' control, like the war in Ukraine, the COVID pandemic, and you know, forces offshore. So there's a growing view among a range of organisations, peak bodies, that maybe the bank is going too hard and it's going to see us fall into recession. And the latest of those is the union movement, who've put out a paper on alternative suggestions involving productivity and trying to bring down the unemployment rate further, rather than using the blunt instrument of interest rates. Certainly, we've seen some messages of concern from business, and we've seen consumer groups and welfare groups worried about the same thing. So there's just concern that there's not enough nuance in the way the bank is handling it, and that maybe we could be in for a hard landing if we're not careful.
Yeah, an interesting one to watch there. Now, also, if you can give us the latest, Karen, on this controversy, the ongoing controversy surrounding the former Deputy Premier of New South Wales.
Yeah, so it's a state-based issue here, but it's getting a lot of attention, and it's a huge problem for the state government, I have to say. John Barilaro, the former Deputy Premier, resigned from politics and all of a sudden announced he was taking up, he'd been appointed to quite a lucrative trade commissioner role that the state government had set up in New York. Now, he was the minister who actually established these trade commissioner roles, and what has now emerged over recent weeks, and this saga has been going on for about 8 weeks now, is that the process was less than orthodox, that somebody else was appointed to the role, a public servant, that was overturned. There was then a renewed process. There have been questions asked about that, whether he was unfairly given a higher ranking than others when he perhaps shouldn't have been, whether other ministers around knew of his plans or facilitated his plans to take on this job. So there's a real investigation in the New South Wales Parliament about this. And we finally heard from John Barilaro himself this week. And he's, in some respects, dropped some of his colleagues in it a bit, including the Premier, who he said he did tell that he was planning to go for this role, and the Premier just encouraged him and said, great. So now the question is whether this has become a huge political, well, it has become a huge political crisis for the state government, which is due to go to an election in March of next year. So it's only sort of 7 or 8 months away, and it's certainly not the kind of thing, not the kind of scandal it really wants on its plate right now. And Barilaro is going to be back in the witness box, as it were, at this parliamentary inquiry on Friday, where there'll be questions asked about his relationship with his former media advisor. He's now in a romantic relationship with her. When he worked with her, towards the end of his time in politics, he put her name forward for a job at Investment New South Wales, which was the agency that, in fact, was dealing with these trade roles. So he says that he wasn't in a relationship with her at the time and there was nothing inappropriate, but the Labor opposition are grabbing this with both hands. And so I think we're going to see some very personal details emerging even further on Friday. And the whole thing is just a scandal that won't go away, with a smell of jobs for the boys about it. And he's now not going to New York. He decided not to pursue that role, having been appointed to it. But the questions remain about whether the government shortcutted proper process, and whether in fact anyone actually misused public office. We're not at that stage at this point, so it's a political interrogation at the moment, but it's not a good thing for a government to be involved in.
Now, also in the last few days, really, the Australian music community reeling, the deaths of three of Australia's most loved musical artists.
Yeah, it's been a terribly sad time here, I have to say. We first saw the death of Archie Roach at the end of July, a much-loved and well-known, legendary, really, Indigenous singer here in Australia, who had been suffering from ill health for some time. His death actually sort of coincided with the annual Garma Festival in the Northern Territory in Arnhem Land. So it cast a bit of a pall for people there, but he's been hailed and celebrated as an icon, really. I don't use that word very lightly, but in terms of music in Australia and sort of forging a path for Indigenous musicians, he's been greatly, greatly loved and hailed. And then we saw in the last few days the death of Judith Durham, the lead singer from The Seekers, Australia's first ever super group, really, from the 1960s. She too had been unwell and had been in palliative care. The tributes have been flowing in for Judith Durham in the last few days. And now, yesterday, the news that Olivia Newton-John had sadly joined them and her life has ended as well. She's been battling cancer off and on for a number of years. She's been a warrior, really, for cancer research, raised money and raised awareness. There's a facility for treatment in Melbourne in her name because she advocated for natural therapies and treatment and has really been a trailblazer in that regard, as well as her music and acting career. So, you know, very sad time, and there have been lots of comments that, you know, if there's a music heaven, there's a big gig going on there at the moment. And we're all missing them here. It was very sad news, and so many all at once.
Absolutely. Let's have a quick word too about the Canberra Raiders rugby league team coach.
Yeah, look, Ricky Stewart got himself into bother. We've increasingly seen behavioural questions emerge, as we know, in the NRL in recent years in particular. And now Ricky Stewart, the coach of the Canberra Raiders, has been suspended from his coaching role for a week and fined $25,000 for making a verbal attack on a player from the Penrith team. They played each other on the weekend and Penrith won. And then Ricky Stewart issued a blast at the 23-year-old Penrith player, Jamin Salmon, who had been involved in a tackle in which Tom Starling from the Raiders was kicked in the genitals. And Ricky Stewart called him a weak, gutted dog. It turns out this goes back to some sort of personal issue between his son and Salmon. So he's been fined as a result of that and told he shouldn't do that.